seems the airline industry just can't get a break from bad news, even when it's not true.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. Wall Street was flying high yesterday as investors rallied on the government's bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. But United Airlines hit some major turbulence and saw its stock suffer one of its worst days ever, all because of a strange mistake. Here's what happened. A headline popped up on trading screens reporting that United had just filed for a second bankruptcy. The carrier's stock tanked big time. In fact, it lost more than $1 billion before trading was halted. Then came word the story wasn't even true. Bloomberg News sent out an alert based on a newspaper story that turned out to be about United's 2002 bankruptcy filing. Asian markets came back to earth this morning. Shares lost almost 2% by the close in Japan and Hong Kong, but European shares are up around 1%. Still building on the Dow's momentum yesterday, it soared 290 points, more than 2.5%. The S&P 500 climbed 2%. The Nasdaq rose 0.2%. Apple is known for splashy product introductions. Speculation is flying ahead of the unveiling in San Francisco today that Apple has again succeeded in hyping, as the company seems to do so well. As Rachel Dornhelm reports, Steve Jobs will have three separate audiences hanging on to his every word.
Apple enthusiasts are hoping for a little silicon sizzle today. Tom Krazit covers Apple for CNET. He says expect new iPods across the board.
A redesigned iPod Nano as probably the centerpiece of that announcement, a lower-priced iPod Touch, and possibly higher-capacity iPod Shuffles.
Online chatter centers on a large touchscreen device or a monthly subscription service on iTunes. Investors want a good look at the company's reclusive CEO, Steve Jobs. Analyst Roger Kay of Endpoint Technologies Associates says there's been a lot of talk about Jobs' illness.
Wall Street would look at Steve's health and say, well, the thing that matters to us most is the guy good to go for leading the company for the next year or two?
And there is another audience Apple has to address today, buyers like you and I, those of us looking for fixes to recent product bugs. In San Francisco, I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Newspaper ad revenue dropped 8% last year, and it's down again this year as businesses cut back on advertising to cope with the higher cost of fuel and raw materials. And it turns out city papers aren't the only ones affected. Schools back in session and college newspapers are going to press. But as Stacey Vanek Smith reports, a lot of those publications are getting a serious lesson in economics.
The University of California, Berkeley's Daily Californian is having some trouble living up to its name. The student-run paper lost half of its national advertising this year and has stopped printing on Wednesdays to save money. It's also slashed its staff by 25%. Editor-in-chief Brian Thomas says the paper has to retool its business model.
While we would love to just stay in the old model of print advertising, it's just not going to happen that way.
Thomas says the paper is expanding its online edition and trying to attract internet ads. Tom Rosensteel directs the Project for Excellence in Journalism. He says college papers have traditionally been protected from industry ups and downs.
The people who want to reach those students know that this is the best way to do it. But the same economic forces do affect small advertisers who are the backbone of college newspapers.
And because most college newspapers are free, ads represent just about all of their revenue. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
The Potters and the Weasleys are celebrating after a U.S. district judge in New York handed their creator a legal victory. The court stopped publication of a book called The Harry Potter Lexicon, saying it violates copyrights owned by J.K. Rowling. The author was awarded $6,700. The judge ruled that too much of the reference guide was just copied verbatim from Rowling's books.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Areva, solutions for producing CO2-free energy and transmitting and distributing electricity. Online at us.areva.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, celebrating global passion to live life to the fullest with 25 runners from around the world. More on global heroes at medtronic.com. And by Ferrer, Straus & Giroux, publishers of the new book by Thomas L. Friedman, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, Why We Need a Green Revolution and How It Can Renew America, wherever books are sold.
We work all kinds of different jobs. It's hard to compare what a machinist does, for example, with someone who works in an office. But commentator Stephen Baker has noticed that in some ways, digital age companies are using some industrial age tactics to measure their employees.
It was more than a century ago that an engineer named Frederick Taylor walked into factories and started timing workers with a stopwatch. He dissected their movements and organized them more efficiently. He turned factory production into a science. Information workers have labored largely outside the range of such measurement. After all, it's easier for bosses to count the revolutions of a crankshaft than the generation of ideas. But now office workers are marching straight toward the assembly line. The monitoring tool, the 21st century equivalent of Taylor's stopwatch, is the computer. Those of us who use them produce rivers of data describing the hours of our workday. Cell phones and BlackBerries add even more details. Now scientists are starting to track our behavior, much like Taylor, and figure out how to squeeze more production out of us. This is happening at IBM Research. Dozens of mathematicians and computer scientists, I call them the numerati, are poring over the data of 50,000 of their colleagues. They're looking at their contacts, calendars, the patterns of the emails they write, the information they post on social networks. Their goal is to build mathematical models of the workers and then manage them with algorithms. The way IBM describes it, managing will be a little like booking a vacation online. Let's say the manager needs to send a 5-person team to Beijing. She types in the particulars, and the system searches for just the right workers. They should be compatible, live near airports, have the right language and technical skills, and come in under budget. Maybe they've all thrived in Asia or in smoky locales. By representing workers as math, IBM hopes to find the right person for the right job at the right price at exactly the right time. And that's how, by delivering the details of our work and our lives to the numerati, we assume our position in the new global assembly lines of information workers. It's enough to make you want to grab a dumb old pencil and sharpen it.
Stephen Baker is the author of The Numerati. He's a senior writer for Business Week magazine. We always welcome your comments at marketplace.org. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. Thanks very much for making us a part of your morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.